So we're going to talk about a German magazine, one of the most respected publications in the world, getting busted for fake news as a reporter for Der Spiegel made up a story about Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and rural America. Gross misperceptions and misconceptions of rural America in the media. And we're going to talk about that and really my travels across rural America. This is really more of a travel podcast than a political podcast, although the base of this story was political and it was about the 2016 election and President Trump supporters in this place called Fergus Falls. We're going to talk about the whole thing with a background of some of the places I've traveled to in podcast 789, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, it's winter again. I wish that it was warm and wonderful like it was when I walked into this bar in Mendocino County in California, but it is not. And in Minnesota, when it gets cold, things happen. So I'm going to tell you more about Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul later in the podcast. But if you want to check them out online now, you can do so at ryanplumbing.com. A lot of talk about revolution these days, and there's definitely a technology revolution in business in this country, and one of the little revolutions going on is a payment processing revolution. Used to be that people paid with check or they paid with cash. These days, they all want to pay electronically. If you are in business for yourself and you do not have a payment processor or you're not satisfied with your payment processor, listen up because this message is for you. If you're a developer and you develop websites or software for businesses, back office stuff, listen up, because ReliaFund is a great payment processor and they can work with developers and small businesses to custom fit solutions for whether it's credit card payments or electronic checks. ReliaFund does that and more. ReliaFund is a payment processor. They have been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. And the thing is, developers and also small business people, when you call ReliaFund, you're going to talk to an actual human being. This is how I found ReliaFund, because I'm using them as a payment processor. They are great. 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040. You will talk to Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. Check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. Most of you know that I have traveled across the United States many, many times. I've been up and down both coasts. I have been across the middle part of the country many, many times. And I have a ton of audio from all these places. And so what you're going to be hearing in the background is some of the coolest places I've gone to and just the feel of it, whether it is a bar in Mendocino, County, California, or the coast of Florida, or the coast of California, or a barbecue place in South Carolina, or a, Perkins in Nebraska or West Virginia. I have been just about everywhere in this country. A couple of places I haven't gone that I'm still interested in going to, but I travel a lot, and I travel on back roads, and I go through some of the small towns in America, many of the small towns in America, and I'm going to talk about that in this podcast, but I have to kind of set the table here a little bit. So this magazine is called Der Spiegel. It's one of the most respected publications in the world. It's German. Best way for me to explain it is think The German Economist, which is a highly respected British publication, or Time Magazine at its peak. This is the stature of Der Spiegel in Germany. They had a journalist, Klaus Relotius, who has now admitted to making up most of a 7,000-word story about a place in rural America known as Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Now, the reason this is news is because it's a political article. It is about the rural experience in quote-unquote Trump's America. And if you're not from Minnesota, Fergus Falls is in western Minnesota. It is south of Fargo and Moorhead and just slightly west-southwest of Detroit Lakes. Fergus Falls, I believe, is the biggest town in a county by the name of Otter Tail County. And for the record, Otter Tail County voted by something like 62% for President Trump in 2016. 28% voted for Hillary Clinton. For Minnesotans, if you've been listening to my podcast, and for the rest of the country, Republican in Minnesota is a little different from Republican in, let's say, Texas or Indiana. But anyway, We are past the political results portion of this podcast and back to Der Spiegel. So this journalist was going to be writing about rural America in the wake of Trump's 2016 victory. And I want to just, you know, review some of his assertions and how wrong they were, especially if you're from Fergus Falls or anywhere in the state of Minnesota, really, or Wisconsin or any rural part of this country, because you know what I'm talking about if you are. And this is just a little bit of politics. I'm not interested in going into normally, you know, if I was a political talk show host, I would go on and on and on about, you know, how fake news and how wrong these people are and everything else. This is a misconception. This misconception of rural America is pretty common, whether it's continental, you know, Europe, Germany, France, or whatever, or England, you know, London, or New York City, or Los Angeles, the part of the United States people from the coasts in the big cities refer to as flying over territory. And it's probably some of the most interesting country in the United States. And drawing conclusions about it is very, very problematic. And I want to talk about that in this podcast. But this guy wrote this article. And first of all, Fergus Falls has been pretty Republican for a long time, as Republicans in Minnesota go, which is the case of most of rural America. Some people are more Republican than others, depending on what state they're from. Best way for me to describe this situation is if you look at one of these maps that has red-blue counties, you will see vast swaths of geography in the United States as red, which is deceptive because most Americans actually live in urban areas, suburban and exurbia around major cities. And just because a place is red doesn't mean it's all red, right? Republican voters in urban areas exist, although not that many. That's why those counties in urban areas are blue, and Democratic voters exist in rural areas, not as many. And that is why many rural areas counties are colored red in these maps. It doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that there aren't people that agree or disagree, or that politics isn't as flexible in those places as it is anywhere else in this country. In various places, there are more of one kind of voter than another. They don't just disappear because somebody puts out a map and colors their county red or blue. Vote tallies. Actually, when it comes to politics, vote tallies never tell the full story, and getting to the full story is very difficult. A recent article by local residents Michelle Anderson, I believe, and Jake Crone hilariously explains just exactly how this Der Spiegel reporter got almost everything wrong because he made it up and has admitted to making it up. I will link their article in my blog at thebobdavispodcast.com about this podcast, but here's a few of the things he got wrong or made up. First of all, he got the election results for 2016 wrong. Second of all, Fergus Falls was described as a town at the edge of a forest which had gates, which is very German, where dragons live, basically. But Fergus Falls is actually on the prairie. It is a prairie in western Minnesota. The city administrator of Fergus Falls does not carry a Beretta to work, and he is not a virgin. Fergus Falls residents are not obsessed with the film American Sniper. There's a whole fabrication regarding the local Mexican restaurant and kidney disease, which none of the people who own the place work, or live, or anything else have ever had kidney disease. You cannot see the smokestacks from a power plant at the local Viking Diner because the Viking Diner does not have windows. There's a tiny window in the front, and there's a hill blocking the power plant, which is 2 miles away, and the power plant just has one small smokestack. There are no armored doors or metal detectors at the school to keep out mass shooters. There are 3 sets of doors at the school to keep out the cold in Minnesota winters. There is a story about the men watching the Super Bowl and basically hanging from the rafters at the pizza parlor, but it isn't correct because the pizza parlor was closed on Super Bowl Sunday. Finally, there was never any busload of wide-eyed Minnesota bumpkin high school students from Fergus traveling to New York City. Basically, the Holder Spiegel article supports the idea that all rural Americans are simpletons and monochromatic, mouth-breathing savages who think that President Trump is a savior. So that kind of sets the stage. And in the second half of this podcast, I want to talk about traveling through these areas that you're hearing in the background, these wonderful areas in rural America, and my own observations and the fascination American and international media has with this now almost mystical and mysterious place called small town rural America, especially in the late 20s, 2010s, 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20. And we're going to see more and more of it. So let's talk a little bit about traveling and rural America in this podcast. Well, when I'm traveling, I often worry about getting injured, so I'm really, really careful. And so you're paying attention. You're not thinking about getting injured most of the time, whether you're playing or working. And when you are injured, what do you do? Do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by yourself? Because it is a thicket and complex. Or do you have somebody like John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates take care of it? John is a great personal injury lawyer. He is meticulous and he's detailed. He also told me that it's not always necessary to go to court. Usually you just need to have somebody help you go through all of the stuff and make sure you get what is coming to you. If you are seriously injured, and he often, when we network together, he provides all these stories and things, but there's, you know, things happen to people and they don't think that they can do anything about it. And this is the lesson that I take away from most of his stories, is that if you have an attorney like John, he can help you get your life back and help you get what you've got coming to you through the insurance claims. 952-683-1351, John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, 952-683-1351. An accident usually comes without any warning, especially when you're having fun and you're not thinking about a catastrophe or when you are working. That is why they call them accidents. Let John Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates help you out. He is a great personal injury lawyer. I personally recommend him. 952-683-1351, 952-683-1351, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It takes you to jdsinjurylaw.com. There's a contact page. You can tell John your situation, and he will get back to you. John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. So I'm going to start by saying travel is manna from heaven. Travel is the most educational thing anyone can do. I think it is far above a college education or anything else. People are beginning to figure this out. I follow people on Instagram and Facebook and on the internet who are traveling around in converted vans, school buses, and RVs, gallivanting all over the country. My favorite ones are the millennials who are, living in vans and just going around. They're not living the luxurious life on the road. In fact, one guy is traveling and he and his wife are working jobs along the way. And I guarantee you that they are learning a great deal about rural America and America in general, working basic labor jobs and traveling around in their van with their dog. And if you travel on two-lane roads, it's amazing. People are beginning to figure this whole thing out, and we are discovering as we travel that there are many small towns and places rural America calls home. Now, full disclosure, I grew up in suburban Chicago, and I have worked in big cities most of my life. Later on in life, I lived in downtown Chicago with my family. We raised our son in downtown Chicago. In fact, we had a great little argument about that at Christmas here recently when I was trying to say that I was from Chicago and my ex-wife was from Minnesota, because it's true, and I was the authority on Chicago, and my ex-wife pointed out correctly that actually, your son is the one who's from Chicago, because he was raised and went to school in the city. Although, I will say this, Chicago is a far different place today and when he was being raised in the 90s than what it is today. So, back when I was growing up. So, we have different kinds of experiences. And I have in-laws who are farmers, and I don't know from farming, right? I don't know anything about farming. I would have to say that rural life was always a mystery to me. I was always, bored. I wanted to know where the Starbucks was. I wanted to know where the yoga studio was. What do you people do around here after it gets dark? It's 9 p.m. Why is everyone in bed? And so forth. And no, I'm not baling hay and shoveling cow manure this morning or anything else. So my view of rural America was monochromatic and I would say negative. And I didn't negatively judge people in rural America. And I'm exaggerating, but so is the media when they talk about these places. And I do have some great memories of rural America. I remember I went to a wedding out in someplace on the prairie in Minnesota, beyond the pale. And there was, I remember we went and we had the wedding, and then we went to a dance later in a hall with sawdust on the floor, and you know, it was amazing. I remember my best friend getting married at the VFW hall in a place called Beecher, Illinois, which is a small town about 35, 40 miles south of Chicago. And that was a fantastic afternoon. And then I also remember my other friend getting married in rural Arizona somewhere. And we were all drunk, so I don't remember much about it. But it was travel that convinced me of two things in 2016 especially. And this was when I went out in Mobile Podcast Command to cover the 2016 elections. And before I went, I had preconceived notions about what I was going to do and how I was going to cover it. And a couple of things happened. First of all, I came to this conclusion that politics had reached an end. Both Democrat and Republican politics had reached an end, and that there was almost a fast food sort of feel to these events, particularly in Iowa, but also South Carolina. And, you know, I drove around the back roads all over Iowa covering the primary campaigning and then the caucuses. And I chose a rural caucus in rural Iowa because I wanted to see that working. I went down to South Carolina. I went on down to Florida, you know, and up through the Redneck Riviera. So that's all those places along the Panhandle in Florida, all from Destin, Florida, all the way over to New Orleans. And I have also been many times up and back and across from Missouri and Nebraska and Wyoming and North Dakota and South Dakota and Montana and Washington, you know, whether it's in the top half of the country all the way out to the coast to Seattle and then down to Los Angeles, or the middle half going through Wyoming and Utah and places like that, Arizona, Michigan, rural New York, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, southern Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And parked in truck stops and eating at truck stop diners and Perkins and, you know, many, many other places, Shoney's and many, many other places, whether it's West Virginia, storm chasing in Missouri and Kansas, air shows, motorcycle rallies, and covering politics, always driving when I could and mostly on back roads. And so you come in through the back of town. And you go out through the other half of town, and you stop at the crappy gas station on the bad side of town, and you get to see, you know, coming into Butte, Montana, or Winona, Minnesota, or Winona, Arizona, you know, or, you know, any of these places. Is there a Winona, Arizona? I don't know. And half the time, you don't even know where you've been. But the thing that I drew was, first, this fast food nature of manufactured politics and manufactured events and the way the media covers the events, where they don't necessarily talk to people. They just wander around and write things down, and they talk to the people that are there to talk to the media, and they don't really get a chance to get to know anyone. But the one thing I saw was that there was a chance for Trump to win the presidency. And I didn't judge it. I didn't say this is terrible and wrong or anything else. But I saw a lot of people making handmade signs in rural America. When farmers make handmade signs, and little people, so to speak, you know, rural Americans put out signs, then it means something. And so I could see that there was a fair amount of support for who is now the Trump, who is now the president. And I talked about it in a lot of podcasts. I don't need to talk about it now. But one thing I learned about rural America as a thing, rural America is just as complicated and difficult to understand as so-called urban America. And you would never make broad judgments about the people in New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles, because you would know that those are diverse populations. Well, people in these small towns in many ways are just as diverse. And what I found in most places, from the town in Texas where millions of cattle are harvested and the flies literally turn my windshield bloody, to Great Falls, Butte, you know, Montana, you know, Sonoma County, there are so many places that I have seen and actually forgotten. Occasionally I'll have a dream or I'll remember something. I'll go, where was that when I came to that conclusion? Because it kind of seeps in. I remember the family in Oklahoma that sat in the middle of this really great steakhouse and joined hands, the entire restaurant full on a Saturday night, with hipsters as well as just regular folks. And there was a huge family sitting down in sort of a, you know, sunken area where they had a bunch of tables put together, and they all joined hands and prayed before dinner. And it was a long, it was a big thing, this prayer. And, you know, everybody just continued to eat and whatever. If that happened in New York City, people would be shocked, or they would really take note of it, and people wouldn't think of doing it. But there, it was just what they did. They didn't think anything of it, and no one else did. And I remember the people living and working together in all kinds of places, whether it was a young woman in Arkansas working really hard to keep her coffee shop open that she'd opened, and talked about her parents and the family there and everything else, and the condition of the home and the town and the restaurant and everything else, and the things that they were trying to do with really a small clientele. All the way to places like Galveston and Mexico Beach, Florida, which was recently destroyed by a hurricane, and I was there beforehand. I just thought it was a great town. On to New Orleans and rural Texas and all these places that I have been to, that I have, you know, stayed in and slept in. We started the podcast out with audio from Mendocino County. I basically parked the truck and slept right on the street in my hammock, you know, inside the truck there, and got up and went and had breakfast at this fabulous place. And there, you know, Mendocino County, California, everything is perfect. And then I have to remember my grandfather's home of Gloucester, Ohio. And I put YouTube stuff on the YouTube channel. I have a YouTube channel which I don't use, but I threw these videos up of my grandfather's hometown, and I talked about it. And, you know, the comments are on, so people commented on it. And somebody said, you know, this place has problems, and you should not be disrespecting your grandfather, and you should be, you know, suggesting solutions. And I was like, it's not my job to suggest solutions for the people of Gloucester, Ohio. Basically, the story in Gloucester is that the Buckingham mine closed, and the people there have really nothing to do, and they're talking about reopening the mine. But the issue and the story was for me to look at this situation with this town and recall the fact that my grandfather worked his ass off to get out of there, and that was basically the whole thing. And some people didn't take it so well, but, you know, I didn't think I was humbled, and I didn't think it was smart of me or reasonable of me to say, this is what you should do. It is up to them to solve that problem. And by the way, whether it's Bristol, Tennessee, or all of Appalachia, this mining issue, Kentucky and Tennessee and all those places, there are mining issues and people and towns that are in better shape than other towns because they're located near a highway, or one town is a farm town versus a mining town, and so forth. I personally think rural America, by the way, Gloucester, Ohio, in the early 1900s, was like any town in the Wild West, or even New York City. It was very violent. All the men carried guns. You know, it was not a good place. It was a violent, difficult place at the time in the early 1900s for various reasons. And my grandfather had great stories about Gloucester. My dad confirmed that there was, you know, it could potentially be at that time a dangerous place that you would never think. This little town of Gloucester, Ohio, would be as violent as, let's say, New York City, or, you know, the south side of Chicago, you know, in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, or even today. But it was. And I think that it's really interesting because no one ever, this is a preconception. Oh, these are a bunch of hicks, miners, what do they know? But the heritage of that place, this lost heritage, you know, there's a town down the road from Gloucester that the mine literally opened up and swallowed the whole town. It's gone. The other town that my grandfather lived in, Hollister, Ohio, is completely gone. It doesn't exist anymore. It's been razed, and I don't know what happened to it. So there are things happening in rural America and small-town America that are significant things that nobody ever thinks about, because they look, the media especially, looks at small-town America monochromatically. It's a bunch of stupid people that voted for Trump, and all they want to do is watch football and whatever. Guess what? Those people raise their kids, they have businesses, they care about their communities, they have different kinds of people that they have to live with and work with, whether it's Fergus Falls, you know, Minnesota, or someplace in Kansas. And looking at these things, or anything monochromatically, meaning it's red or blue, let's say, is the height of, it's an insult. It's an insult to America. It's an insult to the people in these small towns. I think personally, and this is what I've learned from travel, people are people wherever you go. Some places have bigger problems than others. I will go back to the Gloucester, Ohio example. You drive through this two-lane road. You go through Gloucester. It's run down. It's a failing mine town. And, you know, 25 minutes down the road, you're in a place called Summerfield, Ohio, which is this picturesque, beautiful, thriving town in rural Ohio. And you think, well, what's Summerfield got that Gloucester doesn't have? And people said, well, there's a lot of farms in that area, and it's down near the highway, and that's one of the reasons Summerfield is doing well. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're going to report on rural America, you've got to get into, you got to pick a town and invest yourself in researching the history of that town. And it's, I went when I was in Gloucester, I tried to get people to talk, and I tried to find people that might be relatives of mine, and even the postie wouldn't talk to me because they are very closed-minded in the sense that they don't want any outsiders there. They have their own ideas about things, and they are not going to talk to outsiders. So I guess it's apparently much easier to make stuff up than it is to actually sit down and spend time. I'm going to go back to Gloucester at some point, except when I go back, I'm gonna go in armed with some academic information from, you know, Ohio State and some other places about these mining issues, because I feel that I did not do them justice. I just went through and said, these are my perceptions, but at least I didn't make it up. I just talked about my grandfather and my family and what happened to this town, because I was mostly interested in what's the difference between a town that's failing versus a town that isn't. You go through Texas or even New Mexico, and there are all these places that are basically ghost town. What happened to this place? You know, and those are the questions that come up. And those are, to me, more interesting stories than somebody having to make... than somebody having to make up a story. And I think people are people wherever you go. As I said, some places have bigger problems than others. Some places are beach towns, and they're faded beach towns for whatever reason. I found some of those places on the coast in Oregon, or because of a hurricane. When I was on the Redneck Riviera down in, you know, in Texas and Mississippi and Alabama, you know, hurricanes had destroyed some of those places years ago, and they've been completely rebuilt. And there's a kind of a pall. You know, that was my experience, because people go into these brand new restaurants and places, and there are pictures on the wall of the damage and, you know, all kinds of memorials to the number of people that were lost. And I think we forget about those kinds of stories, whether we go into Fergus Falls or Duluth, Minnesota, or, you know, Sheboygan, Michigan. And some of these places, Sheboygan's another one that used to be a big deal because of shipping and mining as well, but they aren't so much anymore. But Sheboygan, Michigan was an amazing place, especially on a clear fall day in late September. But the one thing that I've learned above all others and all other stuff that I learned is what you see passing through these places, especially if you're on the freeway, is not necessarily what is there. If you want to learn about a place, and it's scary to do it because you're not from there, whether it's Fergus Falls or Chicago, you have to live there for a while or spend some time there for a while and get to know people. And the thing that I've learned is our perceptions are limited to our interaction, but it's also part of our upbringing and our experiences as we interact with other people that we're seeing there. If we don't grow up in a place, well, we're never going to have that experience. We're going to have the experience we have by interacting with people there, especially if we're non-judgmental and we try to find out what's going on and we ask questions. But even then, I don't know what the experience of people that grew up in Butte, Montana is like. I only know my experience when I went to Butte. I thought it was great. You know, I thought it was a really, really cool place, even though it reminded me of Duluth. But Butte, Montana is not Duluth, right? You see what I'm saying? People that move to New York from Minnesota and become, work in New York, in Manhattan, even if they live in Manhattan, they are not a native New Yorker. I mean, there are native New Yorkers that are from Brooklyn or from the Bronx or from Queens. They don't ever go to Manhattan. So you go to New York and you have a Manhattan experience. That may not be the native New York experience. You know, there's Staten Island, which is a completely different experience than, you know, Manhattan. And New Yorkers, you know, I think New Yorkers think sometimes that people from the rest of the world think that all New York is New York City, meaning Manhattan, and there's a whole other experience. By the way, I often was shocked at places like New Jersey that are very rural. New York has a ton of farmland, and New York is a completely different place in the northern part and western part of the state. So is Massachusetts than the eastern part and the coastal areas, as is California. And so all these places are different. When you look at these places, western, you know, the desert out of California is different, and the mountains are different than the beach areas. Different people, different attitudes, and the same is true in Oregon and Washington and all these places. To me, it's fascinating. From a social perspective, it's fascinating. And it hurts me, and I think it's a huge disservice to view all these places are this as the same. I have a friend, and very quickly I'll close with this story because I think it's great. He is no longer with us, but when I worked at WCCO, there was a guy named Gordy Michelson. And Gordy Michelson was, at the time, pretty old. He was like in his 70s, and he was a very interesting character. And Gordy had gotten his job at WCCO in the 40s or 50s, as I recall, and this is how he got the job. He had been a stringer for AP and was working for a farm magazine. And what he would do is he would, as he described it, he would just drive down a dirt road and get lost. And he would get lost, and then he would have to go ask directions. And he would then go knock on a farmhouse door. And, I mean, this, by the way, this guy was in the OSS during World War II. He parachuted into Germany and got pilots out. I mean, he was a badass. He would go talk to farmers. And he did this so much that he had this book of, views on, which farmers were the innovators and which farmers were the followers and which farmers, maintained their equipment and what kind of equipment they had. And when he was done, he knew everything there was to know about the farmers in rural Minnesota. And so he took that piece of work with him to get the job at WCCO, and they hired him on the spot because they'd ever met had ever done that. Plus, as an AP stringer, when there was a bad accident or a murder or something like that in some part of Minnesota, AP would call Gordy and say, you need to go up there and find out what's going on, because they knew that he could call somebody there and say, hey, this just happened. Who do I talk to? And they'd say, well, don't talk to the police chief. Talk to Dave. And he knew how to talk to get the story. Nobody does that anymore. Reporters don't do that anymore. And that's the difference between meticulously, following the work to learn more about a particular area versus just making it up. Because the bottom line is, people are just not going to walk up to you and tell you their story. And simple observations such as mine won't tell you their story either. At least I know that. I'll say this is my experience driving through here. But a simple observation from someone like me, even if I am loquacious and detailed, is not going to tell you the story of Fergus Falls. I wouldn't even attempt to tell you the story of Fergus Falls. You got to go through places a bunch of times. And now, these days, I'll go through a place and I'll go, I think I've been here. Yeah, I think I've been here. There's that place that I went to and I forgot all about it. And it's a great experience to be able to have that experience. So don't negatively judge places that voted for Trump or Clinton in the last election or any election. I don't think people in a town or country, and how they vote defines who they are. I don't even think politics defines people anywhere in this country or the place. We think it does, but it doesn't. Politics is not as big a part of our lives as people think it is, even with the degree that government is involved. I am content to pass through, enjoy lunch at the diner, talk to a few people, and if I want to know more, I will come back someday, right? So the Der Spiegel situation highlights the biggest problem with media today in the world, and that is everybody wants to tell you why and how without knowing the who, what, or when, and they don't want to spend the time to find out those other things. So they just make it up sometimes, and, hilarity ensues. And the truth is, the fantasy is often more revealing about what so-called opinion makers think than the reality that they're reporting on. And that's why we take mobile podcast command to the story rather than sit here and read press accounts and spew the so-called facts. And it's soon time to head back out, and I'll be talking about that in the near future. Well, I told you I was going to tell you about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in this podcast. And very quickly, when it gets cold, that's when all the pressure is going to be on your systems. Pipes, water heaters, furnaces. This stuff can all go down at the worst possible time. I always talk about my heating that went down on New Year's Day last year. And the reason was nobody had checked it. It hadn't been serviced in a long time. And thank God for Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. When you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. If you have a small business, this is a number to keep handy because, you know, business problems are worse almost than home problems because you got to keep the business open. And if you have some problem in your business that needs to get addressed, suddenly the business is closed, especially if it's a retail business. That can be a big deal. Ryan goes back four generations in Frogtown in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher.com. I just got on Spotify. It works great. Google Play Music works great. I'm going to get it on Alexa. Stand by for that. And I appreciate the likes, the shares, the favoriting, and the following on Facebook and Twitter, and your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. And yes, Mobile Podcast Command is going to be heading out again. I'll tell you more in future podcasts at thebobdavispodcasts.com. I'm standing on a beach. Well, it's not a beach. It's an overlook on the Pacific Coast Highway, PCH, Route 1 in California, just north of Bodega Bay. Fantastic!